This presentation has been previously broadcast.
The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show.
On Relevant Radio.
Well, overdose deaths reached a record 93,000 across the U.S. last year in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic. That's a 29% increase from the year before.
The Drew Mariani Show. On Relevant Radio.
Well, good afternoon and welcome. It is good to be here with you today. Thank you so much. We've got a lot to talk about this afternoon. Boy, it's going to be fun. And you just heard that audio run. I want to fill you in a little bit on marijuana. Well, not right now. We'll talk about weed. We'll talk about pot. We'll talk about the legalization of it. We've done this in the past. The reason I'm talking about it is that a third of Americans live in a state that allows recreational marijuana. You might be one of them. If you ask me right now, Drew, what's your take on this? Where is it going? I think we're going to see a lot of states embrace recreational marijuana. I think you're going to see a lot more of it. So the question is, legal weed was supposed to ease the opioid crisis, right? It's supposed to bring down this problem with opioids in the country. But are we seeing that? You know, are we seeing that? And what has the legalization of recreational marijuana done? Are there benefits to it? Are there higher DUIs? Are there other problems? Or, you know, is it very much like alcohol, properly maintained and used? It's okay. And it's a revenue source for some of these states. So we'll look at that. That's going to come up in just a second. If you smoke, I'd love to hear from you. If you have a problem, you're more than welcome to join. We'll take a look at the morality of it as well. If it's legal, does it become, you know, moral? Is it okay to do? Is it different than alcohol? So we can get into a lot of that coming up. But for the last couple of months, but you know, before I go further too, I just want to I want to share something else, because I was going to fill you in on some news. But my producer Jake, if you weren't listening on Friday, we made the announcement that as of last Friday, that was the beginning of Jake's last week here with Relevant Radio. And Jake has been my right hand here with audio production, running the board. You've heard him on the air a lot. Jake's been given another opportunity somewhere, and he's transitioning out. So we're going to miss him. Friday is his last day. And he's smirking because I use the word transition. I mean, isn't it funny,
Drew,
how...
Please be careful how you say that. I don't want people to get the wrong idea here. I'm simply
now, Jim, the call screener's laughing at me.
I'm simply taking a new job. I'm not doing anything other than that, okay? I'm not going to be Jackie now.
You know how I love words, right?
Yes.
You know, and it just frustrates me when words get co-opted. Like, I can't use the word transition without all of our minds going to this gender issue. Right?
Yes.
It's all about, oh,
yes.
Jake's transitioning. To who, right?
Right, exactly.
From Jake to Jackie.
What are your
right?
pronouns now? Please tell me.
That's so silly. Isn't it? I also want to welcome Maggie. She was with us in the past. She worked for Dave Ramsey for a little while. She's got a great background. She is extremely creative. You're going to hear a lot more from her. You'll be interacting with her too. So I want to welcome Maggie. I want to call you Groschon. I know it's not. It's your name rhymes with?
Special. It's
Groschon. I like that. I know. And it's spelled Groeschl, right?
That's right. Groeschl. That's right.
I love it. Because my whole show team saw the name. We all thought it was pronounced one way. She says, no, it's pronounced this way. Good to have you with us today.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
It's great. And it's a loss for the Ramsey team.
I know.
But it's a win for Team Relevant. I like that.
That's right.
So it'll be good. So Maggie was here. We threw her into the fire early this morning and inundated her with all that goes on behind the scenes. She saw how the sausage was made. And soon will be helping us making it. So it'll be good. Maggie, welcome. Good to have you with me.
Thanks,
good to
Drew.
Have you on the team. And, of course, my producer, Tom Siskevich. And try to spell that name. I think it has three Z's in it. He told me a story, because I probably still could not spell his name if they asked me. And I've worked with Tom for 16 years. That's a terrible indictment on me. But his own father-in-law, you know, said the same thing to him. You know, and I had to laugh about it because it's a great Polish name. He calls himself the pilot, a Polish pinecone. He's in the back there cranking away right now. Another one of the great team members here. So it's good to have everybody together, and it's good to be here with you. So. Let's hang out. We'll pray the chapel coming up in a little less than an hour. So if you have a special need or want or desire, you can certainly get plugged into that too. But Lots going on around the country, and let me just try to bring you up to speed on that. For the last couple months, you know, we've been able to, go around our daily routines without masks, right? Are you happy about that? I love not wearing a mask, to be honest with you. I see some people still wearing them. I respect that. The only places that you need them right now are public transportation. If you fly, you wear your mask, right? You can get that, but that might not last that long either. You might have heard a number of California counties are now requiring masks once again. Guess where they want them? Indoors. That's right. And that is not just California. You're thinking, oh, that's just California, right? No, that's not the case at all. It may go nationwide. There were a bunch of people in a town hall who protested the mask mandate coming back to their community. Listen to this.
You let a senator come up here and speak in the name of my children who you guys are abusing? Yep. Are you serious?
Yep. All right, we've had our citizen participation.
No more masks!
All right.
No more masks! No more masks! No more masks! No more masks!
Yeah, isn't that... It's loud and disturbing, but it shows you the passion of these people, too. I mean, they are fired up. They don't want their mask. I don't know if I would be that angry, you know, but I get it. The frustration level on this is super high. The effect it's having on children's development, a whole litany of other things. And my producer Tom and I were talking a little bit earlier today about why we are seeing so low few numbers, so low flu numbers. Try to say that three times fast. We're going to talk a little bit later in the week about COVID. But there's some questions about the PCR testing right now, and what might have been the flu might have been credited to COVID-19. So we'll break that down for you. Dr. Scott Gottlieb, I know you're familiar with him. He was on CNBC not too long ago. He's asked whether or not local officials should be taking this new variant, and we're talking about the Delta variant, right, with extra precaution. Maybe that's reason for the masks. Listen.
Look, I think the right decisions are the decisions that local officials feel they need to make to mitigate the circumstances on their ground. I think you're going to see a lot of heterogeneity in how the country approaches this wave of infection, depending on what the local prevalence is. So I would support any mayor, any local official that feels they need to take temporary steps. These will be temporary steps. Look, the end game here was always going to be a final wave of infection. We talked about this. We had anticipated that the summer would be relatively quiet, and we'd have a surge of infection in the fall with B117. And that would be sort of the final wave of the pandemic phase of this virus, and we would enter a more endemic phase where this virus just becomes a fact of life and it circulates at a certain level, and we deal with it. We have therapeutics and vaccines to deal with it. We're better at treating it, and it becomes sort of like a second flu. I think what you're seeing right now is that the end game is a very big wave of infection in the summertime with a high, much more transmissible variant than we thought we'd be dealing with, earlier than we thought we'd be dealing with it, because that variant became prevalent far sooner than we expected.
Yeah, there may be more variants coming, too. That was, of course, Dr. Gottlieb. Dr. Anthony Fauci, he was President Biden's point man on COVID-19. He's alarmed at these rising numbers of cases, even among the vaccinated. So he's thinking about reimposing the mask mandate. As you heard in that earlier clip, it's probably not going to go over well. St. Louis has reimposed its mandate. My producer Jake's going to be heading down there. He was saying, yeah, I may have to deal with it once again. And there was actually a protest there this morning against having to wear masks. So this is a story I was hoping that would go away. We wouldn't have to deal with. Listen, we might be contending with it. And don't forget, flu season will be here before you know it. But maybe on a better note, the Olympics. Have you checked any of them out? Have you been watching? I don't know if you've been catching them or not. Always fun to watch. Makes you feel really patriotic. I watched the opening games, and I just loved the unity of all these different countries coming together. It felt great. And, of course, when you watch Team USA lose a game or two, I was surprised at their defeat in basketball and a couple swimming meets and things along those lines. But go Team USA. The Olympics, as you know, I love it. I've always enjoyed it, and especially the Summer Olympics, the gymnastics. I know a lot of people like ice skating in the winter and things along those lines. But it's really not clear if all the members of the U.S. team are really on the side of the USA. And this is a problem. Okay, this really bothers me personally. The women's soccer team, and I know how much people love, you know, women's soccer. I mean, they really captivated the world's heart, America's heart, I should say. But they took a knee during the playing of the national anthem. And guess what? They promptly lost to Sweden 3-0. Now, I don't want to cheer for a U.S. defeat ever, I always want Team USA to win. But, man, these girls, shame on you. And I understand what they're saying. You know, they're using this as a platform. There was another one, track and field member, Gwen Berry. Remember we talked about this? She turned her back on the flag when she was on the stand after placing third in hammer throwing. And others had done the similar things. There was a story that I just found out about this morning. Herschel Walker is a former football star. He was on, I think, the 1992 bobsled team, too. And he said this. He says, you know, people think I'm very harsh when I say this, that this is the United States of America. But if people don't like these rules, then there's no doubt, you know, we can make things better. But if people don't like the rules, then why are you here? And I agree with them. Why? If you don't like the United States of America, go to our neighbors in the north. Go to our neighbors in the south. Go to any other country. Check out North Korea. Check out China. Check out Cuba. You know, I'm sure they'll be glad to have you. You know, it is so frustrating to me. It really is. So, Herschel Walker, you know, made that comment. I don't know whether you agree or disagree that Tyrus at Fox News echoed Herschel's thoughts not long ago. And here's what he said. Check this out.
Why are you even competing in the Olympics if you hate the flag and the country so much? If it's such a horrible place, why are you doing it? I'm literally wearing the shirt of a man who didn't believe in the Vietnam War, Muhammad Ali, protested, lost 2 years in the prime of his career, 5 years, I'm sorry, the prime of his career. And he gave it up because what he believed in. History looks back at him now as a hero. But at the time, there was consequences for his actions. And he took it because he believed in what he stood for. So if it's this bad and you're this insulted, why are you competing?
Yeah, why are you competing? I mean, you are there to represent the United States of America, not the divided states of America. You're not there to protest. You're there to represent all Americans, period. I agree with these guys. If you don't like it, I say sayonara. We'll see you later. You know, adios, ciao. You know, why are you there? Why are you there? My gosh, I don't know if you feel the same way. It is extremely frustrating. There's no question about that. I'll leave it at that. All right. But one final bit of news here too. I think we should talk about this. The Education Department, they sent out handbooks to about 13,000 school districts across the country promoting CRT, right? We've talked about this a lot over the past month or two, critical race theory, right? Well, I thought this would be a good piece of news for you. I'm bringing you up to speed as we've been talking about this. Guess what? There has been a reverse. They're now saying that that was a mistake, that the Department of Education, to hand out, you know, books promoting critical race. And there's 13,000 school districts. They wanted this in the hands of every teacher there, right? They've actually come out. So I applaud them for that. You know, I say bravo. I'm glad you can recognize it and you came out and addressed it. They're saying it was a mistake. They shouldn't have done it. There was a group called the Abolitionist Teaching Network that set it up, but the department, you know, sent this message out after the handbook was sent. It said the department does not endorse the recommendations of this group, nor do they reflect our policy positions. It was an error in a lengthy document to include this citation. So listen to one parent. They were protesting at a recent school meeting. And again, you just talk about the frustration level of people on so many different levels. People not liking the dissing of the flag or our nation. Of course, we have people not upset and angry about masks and certain mandates. The critical race theory, what our kids are being indoctrinated in, that clearly is pushing people's buttons. Listen to this.
CRT is not an honest dialogue. It is a tactic that was used by Hitler and the Ku Klux Klan on slavery very many years ago to dumb down my ancestors so we could not think for ourselves. CRT is racist. It is abusive. It discriminates against one's color. Let me educate you. An honest dialogue does not oppress. An honest dialogue does not implement hatred or injustice. It's to communicate without deceiving people. Today, we don't need your agreement. We want action and a backbone for what we ask for today, to ban CRT. We don't want your political advertisement to divide our children or belittle them. Think twice before you indoctrinate such racist theories. You cannot tell me what is or is not racist. Look at me. I had to come down here today to tell you to your face that we are coming together and we are strong. This will not be the last. Greet and meet, respectfully.
So much passion, isn't it? So much anger, so much vitriol. that is out there right now on so many of these different issues. I was praying the rosary the other day, actually, and I was really praying for peace. It's one of the things Our Lady of Fatima asked for in particular. You know, she knew what loomed in the not-too-distant future. She saw the horrors. She's, you know, God's outside of time, right, of the 20th century. And she came to these beautiful children, and Fatima, shepherd children, told them to pray the rosary, to pray for the conversion of sinners, to pray for the conversion of Russia, to pray for peace. She gave them an instrument that would bring that about, and that, of course, was the Most Holy Rosary. So as I was praying yesterday, I was praying for our world leaders. I was praying for our country's leaders. I was praying for all this confusion and division in our country. I mean, this is the hallmark of the evil one. If you ask me, it really is. When you see division, when you see anger, when you see animosity, when you see hatred, when you see real divide, that's the hallmark. The evil one is at work. So what binds him? What's the chain that restrains him? I think it's the rosary. I really do. I really do. Hey, when we come back, I'm going to take a short pause. We'll speak with Luke Niferatos. I always enjoy talking to him. I thought of him. He joins me several times. We've talked about legal weed many times. I saw a stat that already a third of Americans live in states that allow recreational marijuana. And I often share, I have several friends who smoke it. And, you know, they hold down jobs and their families. And when they talk about this, sometimes they're like, what are you talking about that for? It's ridiculous, right? So, you know, one of the things I wanted to look at was the argument, what legalizing weed, what are the benefits of it, right? I mean, it was supposed to help ease the opioid epidemic in our country. And as you know, we are facing a crisis in this country, especially during the pandemic. During the pandemic, overdoses from opioids rose by more than a third. More than a third. And look, this is killer stuff, right? Killer stuff. Drug overdose deaths overall reached a record 93,000 last year. I mean, it's way too many lives to be spent that way, right? To be lost. So I thought, look, let's take a look at this. You know, what is the fruit of it? Are there some positives to it? Or is it really part of a bigger deception? We'll dive into that more right after this.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
Trying to stay up on the headlines? The Drew Mariani Show is here for you. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, great to be with you today. So, let's talk. I get emails from a lot of different people. When I talk about marijuana, sometimes they're like, come on, Drew, I smoke it all the time and I'm fine. You know, it's not a big deal. And there are other people who are very concerned about maybe their children or their spouses smoking it. Maybe they're seeing the negative effects of it. And I always want to be objective. We'll talk to Luke Niferatos in just a second here about it. But let me tell you what's going on, because I want to see if it is bearing good fruit. You know, does the use of recreational marijuana, has that reduced opioid use? Because we're in an opioid crisis in this country right now. Too many innocent lives are being lost. More than 90,000 people died last year from opioid overdoses. That's a 30% increase from 2019. I mean, that's way, way too many. And when you've got proponents of legalizing marijuana, you know, when they were doing this, they were you're selling this point. They were saying that, look, you know, marijuana has benefits. It's natural. It can control pain. That's why its medical use is so needed. You know, a lot of people with cancer smoke marijuana, right? So if we have legal marijuana, then fewer people are going to be going to opioids. And that was the reason, but that's really not what's happening right now. First, take a look at what's helping with opioid overdose deaths, which jumped last year. As I said, they're through the roof. NBC reported on a study that they published this week in Health and Economics, they found that the implementation of recreational marijuana laws in 2017, it was associated with a decline in opioid-related emergency department visits. But that decline did not persist 6 months from there, right? It was, you know, we thought, oh, we'll be long-term. No, it didn't persist after 6 months. But in a study that was published in January in the British Medical Journal, researchers found that the availability of legal marijuana dispensaries here in our country, it was associated with a decrease in opioid deaths. So you have an increase from one to two dispensaries in one county, for instance. It was linked to a 17% reduction in deaths. The study also looked at, you know, almost 1,000 counties, 812 counties in 23 states and Washington, D.C. that allowed cannabis dispensaries to operate by the end of 2017. What's happening here? Is there good fruit? Or is it really a great deception? WSFA-TV in Alabama, they reported on the rise of overdoses actually during the pandemic. Here's what they saw, just to give you a sense of what was happening.
Experts say stress brought on by the pandemic meant some turning to drugs for the first time. Also, lockdowns and pandemic restrictions isolated those already struggling with addiction, making it harder to seek treatment.
It was a challenge to attend a recovery meeting online using Zoom or other platforms, and many providers closed their doors.
Council on Substance Abuse Executive Director Sharita Finch says they saw a decrease in those seeking recovery during the pandemic.
And that's why we made a decision to open our doors as soon as we could possibly do that.
According to the CDC, opioid overdoses increased by more than 20% in Alabama in 2020, placing the state among one of the 25 states with the highest increase. Finch says with decreased access to opioids, people in our community are turning to a cheaper option, street drugs.
You're talking about the fentanyls, and also meth is also another drug that is being heavily used in our communities, and also the increase in heroin.
Finch says this, combined with a lack of treatment options available in the state to meet the growing demand, is a cause for concern. But she says those who want help can find it.
Yeah, and there is help out there. If you are struggling, please get it. There can be freedom and healing for you. I'm joined right now by the Executive Vice President of Smart Approaches to Marijuana. His name is Luke Nefarados. And you can learn more about their organization. They do a great job. It's learnaboutsam.org. That's learnaboutsam.org. Luke, welcome back.
Hey, Drew. Thank you for having me on. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, it's good to have you. I saw this data, and I always want to be objective and honest about this. I said I know several people who smoke marijuana. They seem to do it responsibly. But I also worry about those who don't and what ultimately where that can lead. And I'd love your take on this assumption that marijuana, if we recreationalized it, more people had access to it, that, you know, they'd use it for pain management, and ultimately we would see a cut into opioid use. You know, I don't know if there's scientific evidence behind that. What are you seeing, and what's your takeaway?
Yeah, thanks, Drew. And I think it's a great question, because so many people hear what I'm going to say now is the myth that, you know, marijuana legalization will help us fight the opioid epidemic. You know, marijuana legalization has been really sold as this easy button to solve everything. You know, our school systems, our need for tax revenue, our black market problem. It'll get rid of the cartels. It'll give you treatment on demand. It'll, you know, give you everything you could ever hope and dream for. And, you know, not unsurprisingly, that's, you know, proven to be false more often than not. And the opioid myth is really one of the big myths that's out there. So the overwhelming majority of the research over the last 5 to 10 years has indicated that marijuana legalization does nothing, at the very minimum, does nothing to help with the opioid crisis. And at the, you know, the very maximum, actually makes it worse. So, you know, some of these studies that NBC reported on that you were talking about, the studies were mostly looking at emergency department visits, but most of the research that you see right now that's analyzed this link is actually looking at opioid overdose deaths. And when you look at that statistic, I mean, there are multiple studies published in just the last 5 years that find an adverse link. So most recently, there was a study in Queensland, at the University of Queensland in Australia, following 1,500 people from the age of 15 to the age of 35. And what they found was that adult marijuana users were 37 times more likely to use opioids. than non-users. So that's a massive study, following 1,500 people over 20 years of their life, from youth to adulthood, that found this very concerning link. And then you have multiple studies published in JAMA, that's the Journal of the American Medical Association, that found substantial links between marijuana legalization and actually making the situation worse with opioids. And again, I'm going to put in the caveat here. We have a lot more research to go. So I don't think anybody can, say, legalizing marijuana, it's proven to make it worse or it's proven to make it better. Right now that, we're very early in the research. So, don't misinterpret what I'm saying as saying we have the final facts here. But what I am telling you is the majority of the research shows us a troubling link. So the other study I'll mention, Drew, is the Journal of the American Medical Association found over the last about 7 years or so, states with legalized marijuana saw a 23% increase in opioid overdose deaths.
Wow.
And a study, and another study published in the same journal the year before said, and I'll quote, "The opioid crisis appears to be worsening where marijuana has been legalized." So that's what the
I want to know why that is. Some might argue, we went through a pandemic, or there were tough times. I mean, are there other factors that might explain that other than the fact that recreational marijuana is in a third of the states right now?
Yep. So these two research studies I just gave were from 2019 and 2018.
Okay, right,
so that was before COVID. So that's what we were seeing before COVID. Now, obviously COVID-19 is the main driver in these overall, that 30% increase in opioid overdose deaths that we saw nationally. That's COVID-19, 100%, driving that increase. But what we can say, though, is based on the data that we have, you look at, the way the rates have been going, there is no plausible case to say that if you legalize marijuana, it is going to reduce, opioid overdose deaths and other aspects of that crisis.
So let me ask you the other side. Go ahead, Luke. You finish.
Yeah, go ahead.
Please, no, Ed, I don't want to step on you.
Well, I was just going to say that there was a recent study in the Journal of Psychiatry found that actually people who used marijuana, quote unquote, medically, and I say quote unquote because it's not reviewed by the FDA. There's no clinical trials for it. But people who used it medically for their pain actually found it did not help with their pain when compared to clinical opioids that were prescribed. So people don't even necessarily find it more helpful for their pain in most cases.
But opioids are so much more addicting than marijuana would be, isn't it? I mean, isn't that the case not to use an opioid?
Well, so all drugs, all those drugs that we're talking about are addictive. So marijuana is addictive. It's actually more addictive than it's ever been. It's actually tripled in terms of addiction just over the last decade. Certainly, fentanyl and some of these other harder opioids are even more addictive. Mm-hmm. However, most people, when they're prescribed, these opioid medications, they're actually not, becoming addicted and going to the black market and dying of an overdose. Like most people who get that prescription, they're either not going to use it at all or they're going to use it as prescribed and they're done with it. So it's really, the issue that you see with these opioids is when they're diverted to the illicit market, when, people access them from their friend's house, they'll get them and they'll get addicted. It's never typically when the doctor is, very rarely, I should say, when the doctor is prescribing them something, a small course of it, are they getting addicted? Typically, there's other factors involved that cause that addiction to take place. But certainly, like on their own merits, these opioids are much more addictive, obviously.
All right, but my guest today is Luke Niforatos. I'm going to open the phones. I know when he joins me quite often, our lines fill up very quickly. If you have a question, a comment, an experience, something you want clarity on, the number here is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. You can get in and join the conversation. So, the big question is, a lot of people are saying, hey, marijuana is not different than another drug like alcohol. And, some people say, it is, because it's a gateway drug. With these opioid overdoses increasing, does that make the case? Because there's a common denominator. Most of the people who are using opioids, I was reading a study earlier, have found to also use marijuana, either have used it or use it, on a regular basis. Would you say that marijuana is a gateway drug to other drugs? For those who say, it's no different than having a glass of wine or a couple beers.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'd say the answer is mixed because, can we say that you're going to pick up a joint, smoke it, and then you're going to start injecting heroin right away? you know, no, most likely not. Most people aren't going to do that. So in that sense, it's not a gateway. However, we know the data that you're talking about, which tells us 98% of heroin users started with marijuana. We know that clearly marijuana has a role to play in people's pathways to whatever their drug of choice becomes. So, you know, the research tells us that, you know, if you're a regular marijuana user, you're 2.7 times more likely to abuse, you know, illicit opioids, for example, so like meth, heroin, et cetera. So there is certainly a link, you know, whether that qualifies as a gateway drug, you know, I don't know. We try to stay away from that term because it's just kind of become a hot button term that people don't really know what it means. But what we tell people is it is absolutely a pathway to other drugs. And that's just reflected in the literature. That is what science tells us. Now, does it, you know, we still have a lot more research to go to see if it's kind of, you know, causal if then, like if you use marijuana, then you're going to use these other drugs. I think there's a lot more research to be done on that. But the research tells us there's absolutely a link. We can't deny that link.
So why, I'm just from a cultural perspective here, and this is something you eat, breathe, and sleep. I'm just wondering why marijuana today has lost what was once a cultural taboo. Maybe the campaigns against it were so, you know, radical, like Reefer Madness or things along those lines. Or, you know, is the pendulum swinging? Are people more than willing now to, you know, accept and use drugs? There's even talk of, you know, legalizing even harder drugs than marijuana. What's going on within the culture itself where this taboo is no longer there and people are really accepting and enjoying it?
Great question. And I think obviously I would be a very wealthy person, you know, if I knew the exact answer to that question. What I can tell you is that there are multiple facets to this. So I think one of the biggest facets is that, you know, there were a couple of very rich billionaires who decided they wanted to legalize drugs and they wanted to start with marijuana.
Yeah.
And they came together about 40 years ago and said, we're going to do this. And so the biggest name among them that, you know, I think everyone will know is George Soros. He put $200 million of his own money into organizations to legalize marijuana about 30 years ago.
Wow.
That investment is reaping the harvest now, and he continues to give through his Open Society Foundation. This is not conspiracy theories. This is all publicly available information, so we know he's behind it. So he's done that, and a couple of other billionaires that have joined him in doing that. So that was a key turning point for marijuana, because before then, it, you know, people were listening to science. Yes, the education campaigns were over the top and extreme, and, you know, didn't properly represent marijuana. And I think that obviously didn't help with later generations. However, that the real turning point was the money that got involved. And what happened was once the money got involved, there were campaigns to undermine the science. There were campaigns to push this drug on people. And then what happened was an industry formed. And so when California became the first state to legalize medical marijuana, back in, I think it was like late 70s, early 80s, that was kind of the when this industry came into being. And, you know, for a number of years, it was a small little industry, but then it grew. Then other states legalized and the industry grew. And it had a profit incentive to market this drug as something that's harmless. They started calling it medicine when, you know, no raw plant has ever been called medicine in this country. You know, we don't vote on our medicines, but all of a sudden we started voting on marijuana as medicine. And it was served to enrich this industry, which then became invested in by big tobacco, big pharma, big alcohol, major, major conglomerates have put in more than $2, $3, $4 billion into the industry. I mean, so that's where we've really seen the inflection point in the culture is all these messages, all these marketing ads, you know, multi-million dollar sleek marketing ad campaigns that tell you, you know, marijuana will help you with anxiety, et cetera, with no science to back it. So very, very similar. You know, if you're listening to this and you were around in the tobacco days, this probably is sounding eerily familiar to you because it's following the exact playbook of what happened with tobacco. You know, people thought it, you know, helped toast your throat. And here we are now, millions of people dead from cancers from those cigarettes.
It's such a great point. Very similar. Let's talk about big tobacco for a moment, because I mean, it's about the bottom line too. It's about the dollar. I mean, big tobacco had no problem, and they were aware, and it was proven, of the impact, the addictive nature of nicotine. As you point out, we take a look at the cancer rates and things that have been associated with that. Marijuana, they have the infrastructure all set up to grow, to package, to distribute. Where's big tobacco on this? Is, you know, the cigarettes are, yeah, I'm not saying they're dead, but they're $10 a pack. You know, I mean, they're ridiculous how much it costs if you want to smoke. Do they see marijuana as their next big revenue stream?
Yep. So I would say, you know, now we can effectively say big tobacco is in the driver's seat on marijuana. What do I mean by that? Well, you know, most recently we just found out that Altria, which is the new name for Philip Morris and Marlboro, put in over $3 million into federal lobbying to legalize marijuana. Earlier this year, Altria successfully legalized marijuana in Virginia. They were the lead lobbying group on that. And back in January of 2019, they put in over $2 billion into the marijuana industry. So Altria has made huge moves to corner the marijuana market. They've already basically done it. They have a controlling stake in the biggest marijuana company on the planet. So they're well on their way to that. Perhaps you all have heard of, you know, Lucky Strikes.
Oh,
they're
sure.
invested in marijuana.
Wow.
British American Tobacco, they're invested in marijuana. The list goes on and on and on. Imperial Brands, which is the fifth largest tobacco company on earth, based in the UK, they've put more than $100 million into the marijuana industry. So tobacco has long seen this. You know, it's interesting. You look at some documents that were revealed in some of the fact-finding investigations back in the days of the settlement, you know, several decades ago. And we learned that for the last 50 years, the tobacco companies have been looking at marijuana as their new frontier. And that, you know, back 50 years ago, there was, you know, no potential of legalizing it in sight. And so they've kind of kept their research on the shelves, but they are now completely primed. I mean, and if you think about it from a business perspective, it makes total sense for them. They've got the supply chain to make cigarettes and joints and all that. They've got the markets. They've got the, you know, they know how to hassle governments into letting them kill their citizens. You know, they know how to do all that kind of stuff. That's what their bread and butter is. And so this makes total sense for them. And, you know, for those of you who say, well, you know, that's tobacco and this is marijuana and marijuana is harmless, if you really believe that. But, you know, tobacco kills people and blah, blah, blah. Well, I will just tell you, you know, the tobacco plant was killing nobody. There were no cancers coming from the tobacco plant 5,000 years ago when it was just a plant.
Right.
But the tobacco industry took that plant. They turned it into, you know, they invented the cigarettes, they invented the global supply chain, they added all these additives, they altered the tobacco plant, and they made it the deadly killer that it is now, with literally, you know, hundreds of new cancers that we never had before coming from these cigarettes, and it's killed millions of people. That's what they did to a very, quote-unquote, harmless plant. Now let's talk about marijuana. If you really think it's harmless, and I would debate you on that, but if you really think it's harmless, so what? That is not the drug we're talking about anymore. That's not the plant we're talking about anymore. This industry now has altered it, just like tobacco did. And it's going to get a lot worse because the potency now is 99% potency versus 3% potency just a few decades ago. So this is not just a plant anymore. This is a chemical lab creation that is much more harmful than it's ever been.
My guest today, Luke Niforatos. And if you want to join me, I'll take your calls. I know several people online here that, Nick, I definitely want to get, Luke, I definitely want to get to. Cynthia, she was going to share her own experience when we come back. Marijuana led her to heroin. And Eddie, who's listening to us in California as well, has been struggling with marijuana use. We'll get their call. Steve, RJ, everyone else, stand by. I'll get you on when I return.
Your news, the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. Your news now.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
News you won't get anywhere else.
I'm addicted to Relevant Radio. Is what I am.
Stay with us.
Good afternoon, Drew.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and at relevantradio.com.
All right, just a few moments. I'll take your calls. Thanks for joining me. It's always good to spend my afternoon with you. Just tuning in. I was taking a look at some recent data that came forward, looking at whether or not marijuana use has helped to diminish the opioid crisis that has taken so many lives in this past year, whether or not marijuana is a gateway drug, whether or not it is addictive. You know, something that radical has changed in the past 5 years, 10 years. I mean, pot no longer is considered a street drug anymore. You know, it's not. In fact, a third of the states in the country are allowing recreational marijuana. A lot of questions, not a whole lot of time. Does it affect depression and anxiety? You know, the THC levels, what about infertility? I mean, there's so many different things that we can get into here, but I want to go to the phones. My guest, by the way, if you are just tuning in, I was talking to him off air too. I'll recommend a book we were both talking about. He works with a gentleman who wrote a book called Smokescreen. And if this is a topic that kind of resonates with you, you might want to check this out. I think Simon & Schuster was who published it. Smokescreen's the title. Smokescreen, What the Marijuana Industry Does Not Want You to Know. What the Marijuana Industry Doesn't Want You to Know. That's the name of the book. You can also go to learnaboutsam.org to get more info. Oh, by the way, the book's website, smokescreenbook.com, smokescreenbook.com. You can go right there and get it. So you might want to check it out. But check out Luke at Smart Approaches to Marijuana. He's executive vice president there, and their website, learnaboutsam.org. All right, let's get to the phones. Let me start with Eddie first. He's been holding the longest. Cynthia, you're on deck, and everyone else is going to grab you. Eddie, thanks for joining us. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I just wanted to bring my own experience. I've been struggling with marijuana for a little while now. Just turned 50, actually. Started smoking probably my first joint when I was 17. It was rather sporadic at the time. And I remember when I experienced my first, when I got dumped by my first girlfriend, I was very sad. And that's when I started smoking every day. So, you know, I've been struggling ever since then with it. And I think it's a big obstacle to the spiritual life. And not only the spiritual life, but just advancing in life. Life is very tough. Life is hard. There's a lot of hardships, a lot of joys too. And to me, marijuana is, you know, with all the experience that I have with it, it's basically like an ostrich putting its head in the sand. It's just putting everything, you know, to the next day. And then you're just getting old and you're getting sicker and you're not taking care of what you need to take care of on a daily basis. I really do believe that marijuana should remain marginal. It should, even though I was a user, hopefully I'm quitting. Yep. I confessed this weekend, and maybe with the help of God, give me a little extra strength to get rid of that bad habit. But, and it's terrible for the kids. Yep. Makes them lazy. The school grades go down. You just don't face life. You just don't face the hardships of life.
Eddie, a couple things there. First of all, thank you for calling and for sharing. And I want to bring Luke into the conversation. I do want to talk. We were talking off air because I have a friend who smoked it. And he was a type A personality, Luke and Eddie. And he functions really well. I mean, he has a high-paying, high-profile position with a financial company that he works with. And he smokes marijuana, and it seems to bring him down to an even keel. And that's the argument some will make for it. However, I have others who it has robbed them of their ambition, it has made them apathetic, and the potential that they had been short-circuited, and really they are nowhere today. They are miserable because of it. So, Luke, I'd love you to address what it does on that level, but Eddie, to your second point, too, about going to confession and hoping God's grace will work, I have no doubt at all that God will give you that grace, especially if you frequent the sacrament of reconciliation. It'll help you rise above whatever vice you might be struggling with, and you're going to find some freedom and some liberty. But look, he had a lot of points to how it affects kids. I wonder about brain development, apathy. He had his own encounter. I'll let you respond.
Yeah, no, thank you, Tom. And thank you, Eddie, for calling in. I just want you to know I'm going to be praying for you that Christ gives you victory over this area of your life. And I think just judging from your voice, I think you're committed to it, and I think you're going to find freedom because he who is free is set free indeed. So anyway, I'm going to be praying for you. You know, regarding what marijuana does, you know, to your motivation level and just, you know, getting things done, I mean, I think Eddie just provides, you know, an anecdote that is right on the money. And that's what the research shows us. I mean, there have been dozens of research studies done on college students and high school students who started using marijuana, and their GPAs are lower. Their graduation rates are frequently lower. You know, they have a whole lot more mental health issues, depression, suicidality, et cetera, much, much higher in all those, you know, categories versus, you know, students who didn't choose to use it. So we know that this hurts in that regard. There's a major, major research study that tells us that you actually lose permanently 6 to 8 IQ points. Wow. When you regularly use marijuana. Yeah, wow. You don't get those IQ points back. It's very, very sad. So that is established science. That's not, you know, some bogus study. That's understood in the scientific community. So these are the things that happen when you use it regularly. And that's just, you know, a portion of it. And the question that I have is often, you know, oftentimes I hear people will say, oh, well, you know, I use it and I'm fine. That's what I hear. The other thing I hear is, oh, well, Lil Wayne smokes weed, and he doesn't even write down his lyrics. He raps all his songs from memory, and yet he smokes all this weed. Like, how can you tell me that it's going to make me worse off if, you know, this guy's making millions of dollars? And I will just stop people right there and say, that guy is making millions of dollars. That is why he gets away with it. You know, first of all, everyone responds to drugs differently. You know, I have an aunt that lived to the age of like 100, and I think she lived to 103, and she smoked a cigarette every day.
Yeah.
And so does that mean that, oh, you know, cigarettes don't kill you? You're not going to get cancer from cigarettes. Like, absolutely not. You know, what that tells you is that obviously there are divergences from what typically happens. And so there's always that kind of one or two random, you know, cases that happen with the drug that, oh, it didn't affect them the same way. But we know that obviously tobacco causes all these problems. And so it's the same thing with marijuana. Yeah, there are going to be some, you know, crazy, you know, very rare cases of people who do just fine. But, you know, the thing I will caution people is, mm-hmm. you know, you don't see everything in people's lives. You know, with the Lil Wayne example, you know, we don't see him at home and with his family and what's going on or what he deals with in private. We have no idea. And the other thing I'll say is that the folks who seem to be, quote unquote, getting away with using marijuana all the time are typically these filthy rich celebrities who can afford to sit in their mansions and get high all day if they want. You know, they've got trust funds. They've got millions and millions of dollars. If they were to just stop working today and never work for the rest of their life, they would be totally fine. But for, you know, 99% of Americans, Americans like me, Americans probably like you, Drew, you know, we need to work a job. You know what I mean? Like, we can't just get high and show up and expect to be okay. And we have families and kids we got to provide for, responsibilities, et cetera. So it's just not the same thing. And so that's where, you know, you really have to think about the risks of marijuana use. Is it really worth it if you're a dad and you're supporting a family like I am? I've got two young daughters. Yeah. You know, could I really do that to my family to use marijuana or any drug really that might, you know, lower my earning potential, that might lower my drive to work? Why on earth would I want to do that to my family? And I think most people see it that way.
Hey, great call, Eddie. Thank you for joining us. Cynthia is listening in Austin, Texas, and she says that marijuana led her to heroin. I can't wait to hear her story. Cynthia, good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Yes, I was an addict for about 45 years, wow. And I work with addicts in the street today. But what I was going to say was exactly, I thought I'd smoke pot forever, but when they started putting different chemicals into it, making it stronger and potent, I couldn't even be out in public because I would get so paranoid. So I went on to other drugs because once you are trying to escape pain and you ingest a chemical, whether IV or smoking or eating it, addiction will be ignited for a good portion of us, you know, especially people, well, like me that have addiction throughout my family. And so making it legal is, I think it's going to make it worse. On the other end of that, let me say that I do have some loved ones that smoke regularly, and I think for a couple of them, like my uncle that's a Vietnam vet, mm-hmm. it's kind of a balm for him. You know, he experienced so much pain in Vietnam. However, I think there's a different answer. You know, Jesus can heal anything, and he loves the Lord. It took me forever. It took me like 40 years. But also, let me say real quick,
sure.
One of the other issues is what they call synthetic pot.
Yeah.
Here in Austin, you see people walking around with like zombies, and it's just potpourri sprayed with chemicals that are under your kitchen sink, you know, and it really opens the door to the demonic. So making pot legal, no, is going to make things worse. Just a bunch of rubbish, you know, really, and we have to draw the line. And that's it. That's my opinion.
And Cynthia, thanks for your work on the streets there. God brings good out of every situation, and clearly your own life experience, I'm sure, is helping a lot of people. And Luke, I'll let you respond to Cynthia a lot there, too.
Yeah, Cynthia, thank you for calling, and congratulations on your life in recovery from addiction, because it doesn't matter when you start your recovery. It's always a miracle, and it's always something to be proud of. So very, very proud of you, and we'll pray for your continued walk there. You know, you bring up a great point about addiction and how they've modified and altered marijuana to a place where it is unrecognizable. You know, those Woodstock days of the 70s, long gone. Cheech and Chong, they were fired because we've got Silicon Valley and Wall Street executives now, white guys, suits and ties, you know, already millionaires looking to become billionaires off of this plant, getting people addicted to it. And so they've modified this plant. They made it 99% potent. They've made the shatters, the waxes, the dabs. If you've heard of dabbing marijuana, sadly, that is the most popular way for youth to use marijuana here in Colorado, which is the state in which I live, the first state to legalize it. So we're seeing the dabbing, which is just super high potency marijuana. Kids literally black out off this stuff because of how intense it is when they dab it. So that is what is come from this industry. They've changed it. And they are an addiction for profit industry, just like tobacco, just like alcohol. And what do I mean by addiction for profit? Well, let's look at the alcohol business model for a second, okay? And I actually started and sold a company a few years ago. So I look at this from a business perspective. You look at alcohol, 10% of alcohol consumers make up 75% of alcohol's profits. So in other words, they literally make almost all of their money off of 10% of their consumers, the heaviest drinkers. The average person in that 10% drinks 10 drinks of alcohol a day. Okay, so it's just an exorbitant amount. They're making money off of alcoholics. They're making money off of addiction. That's why we call it addiction for profit. Now let's compare that to marijuana. The marijuana industry literally is making 80% of its profits from just under 20% of its users. So same addiction for profit model. They've altered this beyond recognition. Drew, I want to thank you so much for having me on. Check out our website, folks, learnaboutsam.org. That's learnaboutsam.org. Drew, God bless you, man. I hope you have a great time with your family.
That's Luke Niferatos. I'll be back.